Put it away. Forget it. Go occupy yourself with gardening. Always whatever it is that interests you. Unfortunately, those things will not have any eternal meaning. But I have always said, either God is true or he's false. If he is false, let there not be a Christian in the church. We don't need people who believe in what is false. I follow God because he's true. And if you ask, how do you know he's true? I can tell you. Where you would like me to begin? I can begin from the beginning. And you will sit there till tomorrow morning, and I haven't finished telling you yet why I know God is true. And you'll say, wow, yeah, that is really something. Last week I also said, most Christians do have experience of spiritual things, but unfortunately their experience is of the negative kind. You know the kind that you're used to already. You did something wrong and your conscience bothers you, and the Holy Spirit is convicting you, and you feel that you are being nagged to death by the Holy Spirit. I can't do anything right. I did it. No, that's wrong. I said the wrong word today. I have to confess again. And all day long is a matter of confession. Lord, I'm sorry I did this wrong. Lord, I'm sorry I did that wrong. Why do Christian life so boring? This kind of negative experiences. But you know that God, like a good parent, is saying to the little child, no, don't touch. No, don't go there. It's no this, no that, no everything. All day long, no. So the Christian life is no, 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 no. And many people's concept of Christian life is just like that. They grow up with the no Christianity, the negative Christianity. You're not allowed to smoke. You're not allowed to drink. You're not allowed to, wear a bright tie. You're not allowed to wear short skirts. You're not allowed to wear fancy shoes. You mustn't put any makeup on your face. Very unspiritual. You must not use any perfume. Also, especially not expensive perfume. And you must not put fancy decorations on yourself so that you look like a Christmas tree. You're not allowed to do lots of things. Oh, this Christian life, what are you allowed to do anyway, in the end? I remember a friend of mine became a Christian, and somebody said to me, what's happened with this guy? Since he became a Christian, he doesn't smoke, he doesn't drink, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that, he doesn't do anything. What does he do? I said, what kind of an impression of being a Christian this fellow gave? If we're going to witness for the Lord, the only witness we gave is that we are a very burdened and enslaved people, not allowed to do anything. He asked me, are you allowed to smoke? I said, yeah. He looked like, what? Yeah, why not? But I don't like to smoke. It's not good for my health. Oh, I said, that's right. Are you allowed to drink? Yeah. Oh, yeah? You're allowed to drink? Why does he drink? I said, well, maybe he doesn't like to drink. I don't know. But, of course, we don't want to get drunk, do we? But who said we can't drink? You mean Christians are free? What about lipstick? You can put a lipstick on? Oh, I said, I don't put on lipstick. Oh, no, I mean the sister. Oh, the sister. Well, she can put on lipstick if she likes. It's up to her. Oh, really? Wow, you're very broad-minded. I said, why should I be broad-minded? I didn't see in the scripture you're not allowed to put on lipstick. Unless I've missed something in this manual of action somewhere. Oh. So, you're a free man. Of course I'm free. But I don't use my liberty in such a way that harms myself and harms other people. You're free to do anything you like, provided it harms neither yourself nor anybody else. But that is liberty. What is liberty? Liberty doesn't mean I go out and shoot people. So, we give so much the negative Christianity, isn't it? It's so negative. It's so boring. So uninteresting. Who gets excited with this kind of Christianity? But so much of the Christian life is like that. But the Lord can change the negative to the positive. What is the positive? The positive, of course, is to experience the mighty things of the Lord's work in our lives. It gets you so excited. I can tell you stories about what the Lord has done that will really make you sit on the edge of your seat. Yeah? And I'm not kidding. I think I've shared many things, but what you have heard me share is just the drop in the bucket. God is so exciting. Does that sound unspiritual to say that God is exciting? Right? He is exciting. That's the truth of the matter. We need a church with some dynamic in it. I would like to see young people in the church do great things for God. I would like to take them on a mission to India, to Nepal, to places in China, to see how Christians worship, to see the things that happen there. Wonderful, wonderful things. Well, what must we do? What can I say to you that will really get your heart on fire? Now, I don't want to give you the impression that all this is very easy and very cheap. It isn't. That's why last week I also said, I spoke something about the union of wills. And that sounded a little mystical to you, perhaps. What does it mean? It simply means this. This book, which I have called the Manual of Action, is all about the will of God. It's all about His will. Every page tells us something about His will. And union of wills means that I, of my own will, choose to do His will. I accept His will and I do His will. And that is the union of wills. When He says, go and preach the gospel to every creature, I say, yes, Lord, I will go and preach the gospel to every creature. You say, wait a minute, every creature, we're talking about 5 billion people and I'm only one of me. That's all right. We make a start. You preach to one other person, you have already made a start. I've always made it my point to let my will be conformed to His will, to do His will. And that's what it says in John chapter 7, verse 17. If any man's will is to do his will, he will know whether I speak from God, whether I speak the truth, or whether I speak some teaching of my own. Do we want to know? You see, it leads us immediately to experience. If you will today and say to the Lord, all right, you have revealed your will here to me, I will do it. I promise you. You will experience God. And you will know for yourself whether this is truth. And then there will be the fire and the dynamic. And if I say to you, hey, come with me to India. Oh, India? Why India? Because they need the gospel. And that's the way the Lord is leading. You are going to experience God. Years ago, I had a friend in London. And he was a good Christian, brought up in the Brethren Church. You know the Brethren? They are people who are very serious Christians. And I felt the Lord speaking to me to bring the gospel to Ireland. I had this, you know, when the Spirit of the Lord leads you, when your will is to do His will, you're going to know what I'm saying is not mysterious at all. You're going to experience it for yourself. And you will feel your heart being pulled in a certain direction. And the Lord was pulling me towards Ireland. And I don't know why, but I was had this concern to bring the gospel to Ireland. Now, I was in London, in England at the time, and that meant going all the way across England and across the water into Ireland. So I said to my friend, I'm going to Ireland to preach the gospel. You'd like to come with me? He looked stunned. Ireland? I might as well have said I was going to the moon. Because he looked so surprised. He said, that's a long way away. I said, yeah. You have a motorcycle, don't you? Yeah. I have a motorcycle. You get on your motorcycle, I get on my motorcycle, and we go to Ireland. Motorcycle to Ireland? He said, oh, this is so far away. So, what's the problem? He was used to only running around London on his motorcycle. And going across the country seemed to be exhausting. Right across England, across Wales, and then into Ireland. I said to him, you go and pray about it. And I'll talk to you in a few days' time. A few days later, he said to me, I'm going to Ireland with you. I said, yeah, I knew you were coming. He said, you knew? I said, yeah. Oh, he said, how come? I said, well, the Lord was telling me a few things about this. So he went with me to Ireland. He had been a Christian who grew up in the church all his life, and you know, he never experienced the Lord. To him, the Lord is somebody you believe in. That's all. You just believe in Him. People tell you, and you say, believe, believe, believe. Do you know He's real? Well, I believe in Him. I didn't ask you whether you do you know He's real? Well, so to Ireland we go. In 3 weeks, his life was totally changed. He experienced God day after day after day. He was shattered. I think the word shattered is not too strong. When we finished our mission in Ireland after 3 weeks, we got on the boat in Ireland, the boat crossing over to Wales. He said to me, "Brother, can we just stand here on the deck of the ship and give thanks to God?" I said, "For what?" He said, "For all the things the Lord has revealed to us along this trip." His life was totally transformed. You see, for me, I had been experiencing the Lord for years, so nothing of it surprised me. I thank the Lord for it. But for him, this was a revolution. He had never seen the reality of God in this way. He was simply stunned that God is so real. He was shocked. And then you know what? Manual of action. He decided from now on, I do God's will. No more my own will, God's will. And God had some exciting things to do with him. You dare to let God do something with your life? You think about it. Maybe most people are not very exciting Christians because they are just chicken. I don't know if that's the expression here. Or not. They have no courage. They dare not see what God is going to do with his life, with their lives. This friend, this dear friend of mine, he was from a very poor family. He could not afford an education. His father was killed in Singapore by the Japanese during the war. He grew up without knowing his father. His father was a Red Cross worker who was dragged out of a car when he was carrying out a mercy mission and shot by the Japanese. He never knew his father. His mother had to bring him up and struggle to survive in those very difficult years, both during the war and after the war when he was very small. And so though he was quite bright, he couldn't afford an education. So he was working in a wind tunnel establishment. You know what is wind tunnel? It's a research facility in which you test the aerodynamics of wings and aircraft and things of this kind. And he was just a technician setting up these experiments. So after the return from Ireland, he said, "Yeah, the Lord is real. I'm going to follow the Lord." He said, "What should I do?" I said, "Well, you just attend carefully to what the Lord wants you to do. He's going to tell you." He said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, just listen." And one day he came to me, he said, "You know what? The Lord wants me to go to university." I said, "Oh yeah, good." And the trouble is, I've not done any of the entrance exams. No A levels, no O levels. How am I going to go to university? And I have no money to study any of these. I said, "Okay, do the impossible." I said, "What's that?" I said, "You just look to the Lord, open the books, read it, take the exam." I said, "What? People spend a couple of years on O levels, several more years in A levels. Do they do O and A levels here?" "No? No. I think maybe it's just university entrance exams." So he took the exams. His results were not very good, but he passed anyway, you see. But the Lord was beginning to move him. Amazing thing is that he even passed the exams. That's the amazing thing. And then he began to learn to follow the will of the Lord. What the Lord wills, he will do. And he was learning to be sensitive to the will of the Lord. So having passed his university entrance exams, he went in London to a college of the University of London that I hadn't heard of. I don't even remember what it's called. I didn't even know such a college existed in the university. And he applied there to be accepted. The reason he applied to this unheard of college is because he dare not go to one of the big colleges like University College or King's College. He had to go to some unheard of college hoping that there would be not so much competition to get in. And he was rejected. And he came home that day after the interview when he was told he was rejected. And he came home smiling, beaming. "Oh," I said, "you've been accepted?" He said, "No, I've been rejected." I said, "Then why are you looking so happy?" He said, "Because I know God is going to do something." I said, "Wow, he's learning fast. He is really learning fast." So I said, "What do you think God is going to do?" He said, "This is what I see. If God doesn't want me to go into the smallest and most unknown college in this university, it means he wants me to go to the best." Oh, I said to him, that's good thinking. Very good. Finally, he knows what faith is, to take the challenge of the impossible. And where did he go? He went to Imperial College. Now, some of you may have heard of Imperial College London. Anyone who does science will know Imperial College London. It's equivalent to MIT in the United States. So there he goes. He was later on joking about it because they were all queuing up for interviews and he was queuing up for the engineering department. And he said, I peeked over the shoulder of the guy in front of me to look at his university entrance examination results. A. He thought, I look at the guy at the back. It was A. Only people with A's dare to apply to Imperial, you know. And he looked at his own, C, a D, E, C, hardly a B anywhere to be seen. And he thought, I'm in the wrong queue. I'm in the wrong place. You know, I'm wasting my time here. But he said, God can do the impossible. Ah, great. This is so exciting. Isn't the Christian life exciting? This is really something. So he stuck it out at the queue. A's in front, A's behind, and C, D's around here. And so the interviewers came by, and I think the interviewer must have thought, this guy has guts, you know. If for no other reason we have to accept this guy, it's because he's guts. He dares to stand in this queue. And you know what? He was accepted, and he doesn't know why. So that's why I'm saying maybe he got accepted simply because he had the courage to stand there, you know. Well, he graduated, and not too badly, with second-class honors. It was not too bad. But when he completed his studies, I said to him, well, what does the Lord say to you now? He says, I'm serving the Lord. I said, so what happened to your engineering? He said, that was just to test me. The Lord gave it to me to see whether I will stand true to his will. And now I'm waiting on his will, and the Lord tells me, go serve him. You see how it is? His whole life began to change. He began to experience the Lord, and the more he experienced the Lord, the more excited he got, the more wonderful his experiences. He had so many things to share. That mission, only 3 weeks long, completely turned his life around. Because then he knew that the God he believed in, he simply believed in, now he knew who that God is. I know whom I have believed. I'm still in touch with this dear brother. I wish that you could know him. The union of wills. I will to do his will, no matter what the cost. Because the cost in the end is not even worth talking about. Paul said, I have suffered the loss of all things, and I'm so sorry to have lost it all. Right? Misquotation of scripture. I suffer the loss of all things and I count it as rubbish. I didn't even think I had lost anything. When you lose rubbish, do you think you suffered a loss? No. Paul had a tremendous education. A brilliant mind. Dropped the world behind him. He didn't consider it as loss. The loss was about as valuable as the loss of garbage. Because what he gained is what mattered. I wish you could experience the Lord. I wish this whole church would catch fire. People today are seeking experiences of the wrong kind, I have to warn you. Sometimes we want this experience, someone to speak in tongues. I have nothing against tongues. No problem to me. But the danger with tongues is you don't know whether it's from the Lord or not. Any one of us who have dealt with tongues knows this. We have co-workers in our teams who speak in tongues, who have had this kind of experience. I have no problem with that. But it is far better to have a kind of experience that you're sure you have experienced the Lord. That is the really important thing. Don't go for fads. Go for the real thing, the deep walk with God. And that always involves doing his will day by day. And in the process of that, you will see how real God is. Our time is fast running out, and I must conclude presently. But I would like to show you, for example, that particularly in seeking the Lord's will, of course, it involves the matter of prayer. And here, many Christians don't know what to do. How do you pray? Do you have to kneel down? You put your hands together. You close your eyes. You bow your head. And then you say the Lord's Prayer. And having said that, you wonder, well, what else do I do after that? Now, when you learn that the whole point is the will of God, it changes the way, not only how you look at the Bible, but the way you pray. Because prayer then becomes simply one question. What is your will that I may do it? You know, Paul learned that secret in his first encounter with the Lord on the Damascus Road in Acts chapter 9, you remember. His first prayer was, Lord, what do you want me to do? That is prayer. Prayer in its essence is calling to the Lord to ask him to tell you, what do you want me to do? And from then on, he began his Christian life. Because when you ask, what do you want me to do? You have opened your will to his will. It's not a question of repeating the Lord's Prayer in some artificial mechanical way or some other thing from the prayer book. It is all the time looking to him for instructions. And when you do this, you begin to listen for the answer. If you keep on talking, you're not going to hear what the Lord says. If you pose a question to him, and then you attend, listen to what he's going to tell you. How does he answer you? I'll leave you to find out for yourself. He has his way of telling you. He talks to different people differently. But prayer is basically then the readiness to do his will. If you're not willing to do his will, don't bother to pray. Let me speak very bluntly. I'm a very blunt preacher, as you know. I don't mess around wasting time with formalities. The fact of the matter is, if you don't wish to do his will, don't bother to pray. God is not your average slot machine where you want to get a cold drink, you put your 5 cents in or whatever it is, you press the button and you get your Coke. He's not there to say, protect my dad and my mom and my aunt and myself and do this and do that for me. He's become better to us than a Filipino maid. He can do everything for us. We hire him so that he can attend to our needs. That is prayer. We turn prayer into a ridiculous thing. No wonder the world says, what is this Christianity? What is this? These people shamelessly want to make use of God. It's time that the world knows we are a people who do his will. And prayer is asking him, Lord, what do you want me to do? And that becomes a mental habit. You learn to think like this all the time. The question is not, what I want God to do for me? That is how most Christians think. I want him to do this and that for me. I want him to help me to pass my exams and get my business going and solve this and that problem. That is prayer. That is an insult to the Lord. He will do all this. Yes, he will do it. But only when we come to him first and said, Lord, here I am. I am ready to do your will. Oh, I wish I could tell you more things about the wonder of walking with God. Prayer does not, communing with God does not have to be all the time with our eyes closed and on our knees and our hands together. I'd like to close with an illustration of one experience, just to illustrate the fact that the Lord may speak to us when we are not even in prayer. I always think of that experience I had back in London in my student days. When after supper, I was relaxing. I was staying in the north part of London at something called Foreign Missions Club, where poor students like myself were given a special rate and therefore could stay at a low cost. And then I had to either cycle or motorcycle from where I was all the way down past central London and to my college. And I stayed there for some time. And I remember one evening after supper, I was just relaxing. And then after a period of relaxation, I thought, well, I better get on with some study. And so I was just about to settle into my studies when the Lord said to me, get up and go to Central London, to the YMCA specifically. I wasn't praying. I wasn't having a quiet time. I was just relaxing and just about to start my work. And I was, just as I was about to start, the word of the Lord came to me, go to Central London. I was somewhat surprised by this. I looked at my watch, seemed to be getting a bit late by this time. I think it was somewhere around, I don't remember exactly the time, maybe 8:30, 9 o'clock. And from North London to Central London is a long way to go, even on a motorcycle. But the Lord said, go, and so off I went. I went down to Central London all the way wondering, what does the Lord want me to do at this time of the night? What am I supposed to do in YMCA? Now, our church had its Sunday worship in the YMCA in London at that time. And I knew there were some brothers and sisters living upstairs in the YMCA, so I began to reason to myself, maybe some of them are in trouble, they have difficulty, so that's why the Lord is sending me there to help them out. Because when I asked the Lord what I'm supposed to do there, I did not get an instruction. But as you learn to walk with the Lord, you will always know that you take one step first, and then He tells you the next step. He doesn't tell us everything at the same time. We must learn to follow one step at a time. So finally I arrived there and was asking the Lord, so what do you want me to do? You see, that's the question we must always learn. What do you want me to do? I stood there wondering, and I thought maybe He wants me to look up some of those people there from the church who have a few brothers upstairs who might have some problems. And some I couldn't find, and the one or two that I found had no problems. So I stood there in the lobby of the YMCA, rather puzzled. Kept asking the Lord, so those people here have no problems. So what did you send me here for? And as I stood there and my eye looked towards the entrance of main entrance into the YMCA, and then suddenly somebody came in through the door and the Lord's voice said, there is the man, speak to him. I've never seen this man before. I don't know who this person is. So, so I approached him and I said, well, can I help you? And he said, yes. And then he asked me some questions. And then I discovered that he was a government official from Taiwan, apparently assigned to some conference in London, and he was in London only for those 2 or 3 days, exactly that short time. He had just arrived, he had only another 2 or 3 days left in London before he had to go back. And then, to make the story very short, during that time he came to the Lord, just in that very time. And afterwards he said to me, it's so amazing, I came all the way from Taiwan here to London, and here I meet you, and the question of the meaning of life, the whole direction of life, has been answered. Because you came to me at the door and asked me if you could help. And indeed, you see, there is the wonder of walking with God. And so when you read the Bible and you read there about Philip and about the reaching out to the eunuch, doesn't it sound surprising to you that the Lord sent somebody to meet the eunuch in the desert? And that person turned to the Lord, he was reading Isaiah, he didn't know what it meant. Then he was pointed to the Lord. When you have such experiences and you read the Bible, you know it. You know from your experience, this is true. As I told you, the Bible is true because you experience the same thing yourself. Everything in there is for you to experience, to confirm for yourself the reality of God. It is so wonderful. I don't want to give you the impression that Christian life is easy. It isn't. It is tough. And we often have to go through trials and difficulties, as our sister Sylvia was sharing today, the communion. And it's amazing that she pointed to the very verse I was going to conclude on today, in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 4, that in all our afflictions, God consoles us, comforts us, so that we ourselves, being comforted, can comfort others. You see, when we are under suffering and affliction, we consider that a negative experience. But I said earlier that God can change the negative experience into a positive one. And then you experience the wonder of God's doing. That is why eventually you're not afraid of any kind of experience. You don't afraid of problems. When they threw Paul into prison, what did he do? He was singing praises in prison. And you know what happened? An earthquake came and shook the whole place apart. Now, earthquakes are not uncommon in that part of the world. The point of the miracle is not that an earthquake appeared in a place which never has an earthquake. But the point of the experience is the timing of the earthquake. That's when his servant is in prison and it is used to shake him free. I want to conclude then. You know that the last time I was here, some 3 years ago, and I went back to Hong Kong, I was very exhausted from not just the trip to Australia, but through because of the enormous amount of work that has to be attended to. And as our work continues to grow, and the number of churches increases and the number of co-workers increases, it means, of course, that the workload increases. I was very exhausted. And on top of that, I had to deal still with almost ongoing consultations and all sorts of problems. And I was exhausted to the point that I was almost not able to function anymore. I was feeling a sense of distress, feeling, I don't know if ever, you have ever been so tired that your hand shakes, you can't sleep properly anymore, you are really in bad shape. And I was in bad shape, I can tell you. And one day, I felt physically I couldn't go on anymore. I was just unable to cope with the burden of the work. In all our afflictions, will God comfort us? When we are there concerned with only one thing, to do His will, sometimes doing His will can impose such a stress because of the enormous workload. We need His comfort. And you know, it's just wonderful how God comforts us. When you read 2 Corinthians 1:4, does it say anything to you? Maybe not much. But if you have experienced what I experienced, then you know what it is. Well, let me put it as briefly as possible. And that was that that day, in my total exhaustion, I knelt before the Lord. I said, Lord, I can't go on. I'm just too tired and there's still so much work to do. I think I'm falling apart at the rate this thing is going. And then I turned to the Word. And I turned to the 27th Psalm. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Of whom shall I be afraid? And I went on looking at this, reading through the psalm, and crying out to Him. And then I knelt down before the Lord in prayer. And feeling so very weak, I needed strength from Him. I needed comfort from Him. As I knelt there, all of a sudden, there was the sound of a mighty rushing wind. I was startled. Suddenly the sound of the wind. It was so quiet one moment, and the next moment there was the sound. Like a storm, a typhoon. And I immediately knew the Lord is here. He declared the power of His presence. And I tell you, my hair stood on end. That was how remarkable was the experience. As I knelt there, the sound of the wind was so powerful. It was just, literally the wind was just screaming through around the whole place. And yet nothing in the room moved. That was the remarkable thing. I looked out of the window to look, thinking there must be everything is flying around, the leaves. I didn't see anything. Nothing was moving. I was puzzled. I wonder, what is going on? And yet, I heard suddenly the bathroom door outside slam with a force, bang, with such a force that it made me jump. We have all read Acts, of course, that on the day of Pentecost, the Spirit came down and there was the sound of a mighty rushing wind. That is the symbol of the presence of the Lord. It is not the first time I experienced it, but this time what struck me was the way the Lord answered exactly at that moment. It went on for 10 whole minutes. The sound of the wind was rushing. As I said, nothing in the room moved, but you could hear the sound. It was truly awesome. I'll never forget this all the days of my life, I can tell you. After 10 minutes, as though on signal, was total silence. Not a sound. It was absolutely silent. I tell you, the tears just ran down my face. I had just prayed to the Lord and asked for his strength, for his help in my weakness. And his answer was, "You are weak. I am strong. Behold my power. I shall lift you up." And I received all the consolation and encouragement I needed. I felt as though I was totally transformed in those 10 minutes. I felt simply lifted up by the power of his might, by the greatness of his love. As I told you, I could go on sharing for hours of the amazing things that the Lord did. But I share with you this because that happened right after my return from Australia. And I was rather exhausted after that trip. But how precious, how wonderful was that experience of the Lord. It is just marvelous to know God, to walk with him, to experience him. I hope I have said enough to challenge you to turn to this manual of action and live it out. Why be a Christian that is neither here nor there? Why be a Christian that is neither hot nor cold? There is no joy in it for you, and there is no joy in it for anybody else. Either go all out or forget the whole thing. Christianity in the Bible is a radical thing. That's why it says there in Revelation chapter 3 to the church of Laodicea, "I wish that either you were boiling hot or that you would be cold." That is, just leave. Forget about the whole of Christianity. Or else the alternative is go on fire. God cannot stand the lukewarm. The people who go neither here nor there. Oh, this way is no good and that way is no good. But he wants a people that burn with holy fire. And now today we have the laying on of hands. And this is the word of exhortation I leave with those who will receive the ordination. Because my message is to you as well as to them. My word to them is from Psalm 40 and verse 8. "I delight to do thy will, O God." This is the word I give to those who will receive ordination today. Let this be the motto that will direct all your life from this day forth until you see the Lord's face. I delight to do your will, O Lord. Now, in the beginning, you might not find it so easy to delight in his will. But you aspire to delight in his will. And what does delight mean? It means happiness. It means joy. It is the joy of doing his will. Once you have lost the joy of doing his will, you might as well forget the ministry. There's no point continuing. It becomes a burden that you have to drag around. But when it is a joy, then you will set the people on fire who are under your care. They see that you delight in his will. No matter how difficult that will is. As I said, his grace is sufficient. That mighty rushing wind is the symbol of the greatness of his power. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. What are the all things? The all things of his will, of course. Everything he wants me to do, I can do it. Because his power is sufficient. Psalm 40 verse 8 is quoted in Hebrews chapter 10 verse 7. Which shows that this verse appears then both in the Old and New Testaments. And in the context of those two passages, Psalm 40 and Hebrews 10, it says there, sacrifice you have not desired, but a body you have prepared for me. And then it goes on to say, I delight to do your will. Now, any of you who know biblical exegesis will realize that these passages lie behind Romans 12:1, to be a living sacrifice. He didn't want the animal sacrifices. What he wanted is the living sacrifice, a body you have prepared for me. Here I am living for you. That is the whole secret of the matter. What is it to be a living sacrifice? It is to be somebody committed to doing his will. And that's why Romans 12 verse 2 goes on to say, so that you may ascertain what the will of the Lord is. Now, if you didn't know that Psalm 40 verse 8 stands behind Romans 12, 1 and 2, you would know the connection. Why one moment he's talking about a living sacrifice, the next moment he's talking about the acceptable will of God. That's the connection. A living sacrifice is to live in such a way that we delight to do his will. Let us be quiet before God in prayer.